Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What kind of mythical powers does a Sun Devil have? We got to consider that.
It's embarrassing, but we are who we are. We're not a very good team, but we're 3-1 somehow. And we got all the voters fooled, thinking we're pretty good.
Jaworski Lane at 275 pounds showed a heck of a lot of athletic ability.
Welcome to a special Monday edition of the RotoWire College Football Podcast. It is Monday, November 8th. We are in the wake of week 10 of the college football season. Nick Whalen joined, as always, by RotoWire's head honcho of college football content, the guru himself, John McKechnie. This is our first Monday recap episode of the season. Obviously, we're more than halfway through, but we wanted to switch it up a little bit, go a little bit lighter with our Wednesday or Thursday preview, and then try to do a lot of the recapping on this podcast and have two episodes out throughout the course of the week, instead of going long with one later in the week. So we'll see how it goes. It's a work in progress. If you have any feedback, you know, shout us out in the comments on your podcast app, shout us out on Twitter. We're open to whatever works best as far as getting our audience the content that you guys want with regard to college football. But Jonathan, a great week in college football. We went into this one thinking it was a good week, not a great week on paper. I think a lot of these games that maybe we thought would be blowouts ended up not being blowouts. We had a game in the ACC that produced 113 total points. The mighty Wake Forest Demon Deacons went down in that one. Cincinnati got pushed at home by Tulsa. Where do you want to begin?
Yeah, gosh, that Wake Forest UNC game, you know, a lot of the times, you know, every week there's a game that's circled as like the chalk, you know, the one that's going to be the one that draws the most attention for DFS. And it doesn't always live up to the hype, but this one did it and then some. You know, the total was like 76, obviously blew past that by a significant margin, and there's just fantasy goodness everywhere. I mean, the one guy that kind of didn't live up to the expectations was Josh Downs on UNC, top priced receiver on the board. He didn't quite get to where his investors would have hoped, but a Howell Hartman and Ty Chandler combo from this game, maybe if you had A.T. Perry as well, really set you up for the rest of the day. So that was a good shock for sure. And too bad to see, you know, Wake Forest kind of get eliminated from the playoff picture. I wanted to see, you know, the committee kind of have to answer the Wake Forest question eventually, but they kind of took themselves out of it. But I think to me that the biggest surprise or the most impactful result from the weekend was Michigan State losing to Purdue. And I don't know if you got this sense as well, but by the time like Saturday morning rolled around, it felt almost like it was written in stone. The way that Game Day was talking about it and the way that just Twitter discourse was, it was like Michigan State was walking into its own funeral. And it was strange to see an undefeated Michigan State team kind of get talked about that way. And ultimately came to fruition.
Yeah, and this game was close throughout. You know, it wasn't really until later into the second half that Purdue pulled away, and you kind of started to see that this was really going to happen. But a sloppy game, I thought, for Michigan State, starting with that fumble on the first drive. But I didn't feel like Purdue played a perfect game either. I mean, it was a really nice game for Aiden O'Connell, who's had some very high highs and plenty of lows as well this year. Kind of a weird player to evaluate. But Purdue, I mean, they're back in the top 25 now. I have no idea really how to evaluate this team. You know, they played Notre Dame tough early in the season. Obviously, they had that win over Iowa. I mean, they've beaten, at the time, the number two and now the number three ranked teams in the country. Like, Purdue has as good of wins as anybody, but, you know, you're barely squeaking by Nebraska. You know, you're losing to Minnesota. You're barely squeaking by Illinois. They're just a really, really strange team. But two top three wins on the season for the Purdue Boilermakers. One of the underratedly weird things about this college football season.
Yeah, I wish they weren't ranked coming into this weekend, because I feel like they only can pull off the crazy upset when they're not ranked. And the second that you get expectations, mm-hmm. you get what happened to them against Wisconsin. So I would have liked to see an unranked Purdue team going into Columbus this weekend. I would have given them a better chance, but now that they're ranked, they're toast, obviously, for this weekend. But no, credit to them. They've had some crazy wins. I tweeted out on Saturday, being a Purdue fan has to be just such a disorienting experience. But right. I mean, hey, like, if you're a program at that level, upsets are kind of like your Super Bowl, like, cause you're more likely than not really going to be competing for conference championships or a playoff spot or anything, but getting those marquee wins that can just like make your whole week, make your whole season, like that's what you're going for. And Purdue's gotten two of them now.
All right, let's go to Ohio State and Nebraska. Another kind of weird game for Ohio State. They hang on, they get the victory 26-17. This one at Nebraska. I had a lot of questions about some of the decision making down the stretch in this game by the Nebraska offense specifically. I thought this game was very much there for the taking as far as potentially pulling this upset at home. And ultimately, credit to Ohio State for finishing it out. But I thought late in this game, Nebraska was in position to make this a lot more interesting than it ended up being. And given all that we know about this program and about how things have gone under Scott Frost, this is probably the result that you'd ultimately expect. I thought it was interesting. Like, right before we hopped on here, we saw a public showing of support from the Nebraska AD, who announced that Scott Frost is still our guy. However, we are going to restructure his contract going forward. And maybe you have more details on that than I do. I don't know exactly what that's going to entail, but it was essentially confirming that, you know, while we are quote unquote confident in Scott Frost, we do realize that there are some questions here and we need to acknowledge it.
Yeah, he's not quote unquote winning these games. So that eventually becomes a hard thing to pay for, to just, you know, a program that holds itself in the esteem that Nebraska does. Close is not enough when it comes to these big mm-hmm. games. And you know, they played Michigan close earlier this year. They've been in close against good teams at various points of the season or various points of Scott Frost's tenure. And yet it doesn't really show up in the win column very much. And yeah, I mean, on the other side with Ohio State, it wasn't a great game from them, of course, but they survived and advanced it. I still think this is a decent Nebraska team, so that they aren't the pushovers or paper tigers that they were maybe when Ohio State went into Lincoln like 2 years ago and that game was over by the end of the first quarter type of thing. Mm-hmm. But I think that at the same time, Ohio State isn't as good as they were that season. They didn't have Garrett Wilson on Saturday, but Jackson Smith and Jigba really stepped up. School record 15 receptions in that one, over 200 yards. Pretty crazy day from him. A lot of just kind of crazy individual receiver performances that this week. A quick tangent. So in addition to him staying in the Big Ten, Jahan Dotson, 11 grabs for 242 and three touchdowns against Maryland. He was a guy that we liked for DFS this past week. Mm-hmm. He really went nuts. And then the star of Maction, and there were many stars of Maction, but Trayvon Rudolph, 14 grabs for 309 and three touchdowns as well. And Jack Sorensen in the Maction for Miami of Ohio, 283 yards and a pair of touchdowns. So Smith and Jigba, one of many just absurd mm-hmm. receiver performances this week.
Yeah, we didn't even mention David Bell, too, in that Purdue game. 11 for 217 and a touchdown. We saw Wisconsin a couple weeks ago really shut him down. But in both of their upsets, he's had monster games.
Yeah. He's really the key to that offense, like, because Aiden O'Connell is just not great. But when things are working in Purdue's offense to where David Bell is even a little bit open, mm-hmm. then, you know, that makes Purdue a very dangerous offense, because David Bell is truly one of the best receivers in college football this year, and really kind of has been for the last couple of years. But right. in addition, or just kind of rounding it out, with Ohio State. They got it done. They still have everything in front of them with quality wins to notch here the rest of the way. They got Michigan State in a couple weeks. Obviously, that's not as big nowadays, but still something. And then Michigan looming at the very end of the season. So I still think Ohio State's an extremely good team. And you know, with the way that this week shook out, I think that they could be challenging to be in the top four when the rankings come out this week. Maybe they end up staying the same, though, with Oklahoma boosting up. We'll see.
Yeah, I really don't have too many questions about Ohio State. It for me, this was just a day where Ohio State really didn't show up in the way that we're used to, and I thought it was there for Nebraska to notch what would have been a much, much needed signature win for Scott Frost. And I mean, the drive that I'm really referring to was that 11 plays, you know, you're finally moving the ball, and you get all the way down, you know, into the red zone. And I thought they should have gone for it. They had a 4th-and-4 at the 13 after three consecutive plays where you're like, first two, you just run it into the line. You know, you gain a couple yards, incomplete on 3rd down. Like, just throw the ball, please. And then you get into an obvious passing situation. It's incomplete. I thought they should have gone for it at home, 4th-and-4 on the Ohio State 13. Instead, they opt to kick. And at that point, it would have made it a 3-point game. And you missed a 31-yarder. And as soon as that missed, you just kind of knew this wasn't going to go their way.
No, 100%. Yeah, that, like, Nebraska should have known by that point in the game to not trust its kicking unit and to just kind of keep its foot on the gas and do what it can to use Adrian Martinez and his mobility to keep the chains moving. Because, yeah, Contreras going 1-for-3, and that's definitely not the first time he's missed some kicks this year. I mean, it's just been brutal for Nebraska as far as trying to leave drives with at least some points. It's really been tough. So yeah, like you said there, that was really a key critical sequence that once again just didn't end up going Nebraska's way.
So we mentioned, you know, Aiden O'Connell, AOC, with his 536 yards, 3 touchdowns. Purdue might own the 2 best wins in the Big Ten, but Illinois now owns wins over both Penn State and Minnesota after holding on for a just ridiculously ugly, sloppy 14-6 win on Saturday. Brandon Peters finished this game 7 of 9 for 80 yards and a touchdown. But hey, no picks. 2 picks on the other side for Tanner Morgan.
Yeah, that's efficiency from Brandon Peters. That's all you can hope for, really. So just, yeah, that's an ideal game for this Illinois team, is just throw it less than 10 times, just run the clock out, get a couple of touchdowns and see what happens from there. And yeah, Minnesota was definitely one of those teams that caught the most side eye for their ranking after last week, especially with like an unranked UTSA team sitting out there who crushed again this weekend. So yeah, Minnesota, that was just like an obvious, these guys aren't going to be in the top 25 for long. I didn't think that they would lose to Illinois, and they were 2 touchdown favorites in this one. So that's bad. But at no point have I really believed in this Minnesota team.
All right, where do you want to go next?
Let's see here. So I want to get to the SEC night window. So the entertaining game from Saturday night was not LSU-Bama. It was Tennessee and Kentucky, which was absurd. So Tennessee, their time of possession, 13 minutes and 52 seconds in a game that they scored 45 points in. So they basically did what Wake Forest did a couple weeks ago against Army, where they just scored every single time they had the ball. They averaged on like just short of 10 yards per play over the course of that game. So 47 plays, 461 total yards of offense, just absurd. Just Kentucky could not stop them. But then on the other side, Kentucky possessed the ball so much that Tennessee's defense got worn down. I mean, 99 plays you have to defend on the other side of that one. That's definitely going to wear on you after a while. So even though Kentucky wasn't nearly as efficient with 6.2 yards per play, I mean, holding the ball for 46 minutes is going to keep you in any game, basically. So it was a close one. It was a really fun, exciting game. And the DFS implications from that were great. Hendon Hooker was awesome. And then on the other side, Wandale Robinson continues to be a total stud, especially in PPR formats. Big night from Will Levis, of the Kentucky quarterback. So that was a fun one, but yet another ranked loss that we saw this week to an unranked team. And, you know, coming up here, we got Tennessee against Georgia. We'll unpack this one a little bit more in the preview show later this week. But, you know, Tennessee for all their warts, man, that they are really fun and really efficient on offense.
Yeah, Tennessee, 4 touchdown drives in this game with 3 plays or fewer. Insane. I mean, you mentioned the time of possession discrepancy is kind of the main stat that you want to look at for this one to get a view of how that transpired. But easily the most entertaining game in the late window for the SEC. LSU-Bama, kind of a letdown. I mean, Alabama winning this one 20-14, probably not the result most expected in terms of the score. But this Alabama running game, very concerning to rush for 6 yards on 26 carries in this game. And that's counting 22 yards of sack yardage for Bryce Young. But still, unable to get anything going with Brian Robinson. Bryce Young, nice game through the air, got over 300 yards, 24 of 37. But this was an uncharacteristic type of game from Alabama. And I still, we mentioned this on the Thursday show last week, John, like there's still that Alabama aura where no matter what, no matter how bad they might look, you still don't want to play this team, but more close calls than we're used to at this point in the season for an Alabama team.
Yeah. I mean, usually they're getting the respect in Vegas, they were 28.5-point favorites going into this one, didn't even score 28 points. They just let LSU hang around. So yeah, usually the Bama team will just kind of boat race a team that it's supposed to. Like it's very rare that it doesn't even come close to covering their spread to that extent. So yeah, like you said, the offense had to become kind of one dimensional. The offense got hot for a little while and then LSU kind of caught back up to them. And, they were able to, LSU was just kind of able to hang around. Like LSU had chances to actually win that game, which is crazy to think about. They got some long runs, that they got some conversions, and they really made it a close game all the way to the end. So at least you can say that from like a fan perspective, that it was an entertaining game. But yeah, I mean, if you're looking at this as for, what it means big picture wise for Alabama, you still consider them one of the 4 best teams in college football, of course, but it is strange to see them having struggled against, teams that have proven to not be very good. And I'm speaking specifically, of course, about like the Florida game and now this LSU game. And this one was at home.
Right. Bama did not score for the final 28 minutes after that long touchdown to Jameson Williams early in the third quarter. It scored all of its points within like 5 minutes of game time. It was like the final 3 minutes of the second and then that first drive to open the third. So long droughts. I mean, they did not score at all in the first quarter. Alabama finished on its last 5 drives, punt, 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 fumble, punt. And every single one of those possessions ending in a punt was a 3-and-out.
Yeah. I mean, it was crazy. It was almost like, what am I seeing type of deal where this Alabama offense just could not sustain any sort of offensive momentum in the second half. Very, very strange. I'm more inclined to consider that a hiccup as we get into the later parts of the season. But I will say that I don't think it's impossible that Alabama loses another game before the end of the season.
Yeah, well, they'll be tested next week. New Mexico State comes in 51.5-point dogs at Alabama on Saturday. The 8-1 Crimson Tide against the 1-8 New Mexico State. What is their
Aggies.
Mascot? Do you know? They are the
Aggies.
Okay.
Yes.
Looking at ESPN's FPI, we got a 0.1% chance of New Mexico State pulling this one off. So make sure
that might be too
there.
High.
Yeah, tune into the Thursday show. And we'll give our pick on that plus 51.5 number for NMSU. Where else do we have to hit here? Do you want to go to the dog report? 43-6 for number one Georgia over Missouri. Not a ton to see from this one.
No, I mean it was the second time this year that a coach on the other team has tried to score late in the game when there is nothing really to be playing for. That, so Georgia had to do like a little goal line stand at the end just to preserve the no touchdown for the entire game going up against Missouri. But otherwise, not a lot to unpack from that one. But I think that this game on Saturday night in Knoxville is going to be very, very entertaining. 20.5-point favorites, I think the dogs are, but should be a good one there. Texas is super dead in the water. It's crazy that, they lost 30-7 and pretty much got choked out throughout and also had Bijan Robinson leave that game with a neck strain. So that's hopefully he'll be good to go for this week. But yeah, the Texas, I can't believe the type of skid that they're on. And then just sort of like a And Baylor, of course, losing to TCU. That was another one that started to get some gambling buzz. Like, oh, I like TCU in the spot, and I'd be like, why? But at the same time, people were into it, and they ended up being correct. So I guess fading Baylor was the correct play in that one. And then just a kind of stray observation. This is from the latter part of Saturday night, but USC is like the person at the party that no one really knows that still like needs to do everything it can to make itself the center of attention. Like nobody cares about USC this year. They are completely like inconsequential, and yet they still feel the need to have this like dramatic quarterback rotation where the interim coach said going into halftime, like, oh, Jackson Dart's going to start the second half. And then it was Keaton Slow. It was like, oh, you got us. You got us good. Oh, you lost 31-16 and scored 6 points in the second half. Well, very interesting of you guys to be rotating your quarterbacks and like just publicly sabotaging your own team and embarrassing yourself in public. So USC, shame on you. And also Auburn losing to A&M in what was a very boring game. I don't think there were any offensive touchdowns in that one, 20-3. But, you know, Texas A&M still has some things, working in its favor here as we get down the stretch.
I just have a couple more items on my list, and then we'll get out of here. Returning to the Georgia game real quickly, I know this is not news to you, but for more national fans, I think Brock Bowers has a chance to be like an all-time SEC. You know, when we're doing this podcast 30 years from now, he's somebody that we start the show with, you know, the Brock Bowers of college football podcast. Like there's there's just something about that guy that like I have a feeling he's going to be like whether he has a successful NFL career, we'll see. But he's going to be a very memorable college player. He's on my radar.
He's just like a guy that loves to mosh the second right. That he catches the ball. Like he's got it with bad intentions. He's very much like George Kittle in that respect. So
yeah,
Kittle obviously plays so hard. It almost becomes a detriment because he gets hurt so much. But I mean, yeah, Browers to be doing what he's doing as a freshman is pretty ridiculous.
Yeah. He's one of those guys that, I'm just like, how did like in high school, this, he had to just be so dominant. And I'm sure you know more about that than me, but it's like, if he's this dominant as a freshman in the SEC, like what does his high school tape look like? And like his shoulder pads are like 20% bigger than they should be. Like he looks like he's straight out of like a game that you'd be watching on SEC Network from like 2002.
Yeah. Yeah. He went to the equipment room that has since been like bricked over and replaced by the new equipment room, but he like bust through the wall and found some shoulder pads that like Herschel Walker used to wear or something. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. We touched on Cincinnati a little bit at the top, but we should acknowledge the Bearcats. They should have lost. They are very lucky to still be undefeated. And that would have ended, I think, what's probably the most compelling story right now in college football, especially as, you know, we kind of lose like a contender, it seems like every single week to some of these upsets. But like the Cincinnati debate, I think has probably been like the number one national topic. I think, you know, even people who don't necessarily like follow college football day in and day out, at least have an opinion on whether Cincinnati should be included. And we are very close to just ending that argument altogether in this one.
I mean, when Ritter fumbled at the goal line, I was like, oh my God. Because they had just had a goal line stand to kind of, it's like, okay, breathe. Like, we're good. Yep. We're out of this. And then you fumble, and then it's like, oh my Lord. Like, how many lives do these Bearcats have? You know, because they've played other close games, maybe not quite this close. But, man, yeah, and Tulsa is not good. Like, Tulsa has shown up against an Ohio State earlier this season or stuff like that. But man, everyone knows that Cincinnati has no margin for error. And you know, for them to get the spotlight, get the recognition, get the respect, you know, get game day at Cincinnati on campus, you know, okay, guys, like your center stage, do something. And for them to really almost lose to a bad team is that shakes my confidence a bit in the Bearcats here.
Yeah, it really does. This was a big time style point opportunity for Cincinnati that was squandered there. And on the Tulsa note, I mean, their results are bizarre this year. Like they have played some good teams really closely, but you are officially in the Nick Whalen poll. You are disqualified from being a good team if you lose to UC Davis.
That's right. Yeah, they got trucked in the opener.
Week one.
That's right. God, you know, thank God for them that Washington exists, because Washington lost to Montana that weekend and things haven't gotten a whole lot better for Jimmy Lake and company.
That is the one final item I have on my list is Washington. It feels like Oregon had just played the same game that it's played every other game this year. You know, you win by multiple scores. It doesn't look pretty, but here we are with the Ducks still very firmly in playoff contention now. You know, they put up 52 on Colorado last week, but this one was pretty emblematic of like the performances we saw against Cal, the game against UCLA. You know, obviously they still have one of the best wins in the country, winning at Ohio State, but man, they've kind of been on that same treadmill that Oklahoma's found itself on for like 80% of its season.
Yeah, no, I love that comparison. I mean, you know, to win a game with under 100 passing yards when you're not a triple option team, like that's kind of crazy. The Oregon just kind of has the luxury of bludgeoning teams this way, because the way that Cristobal is recruited, they just have bigger dudes that they can just play that bully ball style, and generally it works. But yeah, it's not going to result in a lot of pretty overall performances. So you still have to like Oregon's chances the rest of the way. They got Washington State coming up this week. They go to Utah. That could be pretty tricky. And then obviously they finish the season against the Beavs. So we'll see how that goes. But you know, three non-cupcake teams the rest of the way. This was probably the easiest game that they were going to have left. If they keep playing this ugly style, we'll see if they're able to make it through November still with just the one loss.
Well, what is your gut feeling on that? Do they make it through? They got Washington State at Utah and then home for Oregon State to finish out. Does Oregon make it through that unscathed?
I'll say it now. They're going to lose to Utah.
Oof. Oof. I mean, will they be firmly favored in that game?
They should be favored by at least a touchdown, I would imagine, like, provided that they both take care of business this coming week. I think that Oregon still probably gets, you know, 7.5, 8.5, 9.5, something like that.
Okay. On the road, that would be impressive, especially with, you know, the more that they continue to stack these iffy performances. All right, man, anything else from this week you want to hit on our way out?
That's about it. Florida lost to South Carolina and got absolutely dominated along the way. But I think no better note to leave on than that. But yeah, it was a fun, funky weekend for college football. A lot of ranked teams losing, some taking care of business. And again, we're kind of in a spot where it's like, who's good? You know, we'll get a weekend like this one to kind of get some further clarity. But I do kind of feel like this is just sort of a musical chairs of teams right now, where they are at one point, they're not going to be in a few weeks. And there's just going to be some serious variance over the course of the next few weeks. I think, you know, if Bama just crushes it, its next conference opponent, then the sins of this past Saturday get forgiven, that type of thing. So we'll see how it goes from here. But I think pretty much every team outside of Georgia has shown at least a fatal flaw, and Georgia still arguably has theirs, but they just haven't had to pay for it yet with the way that they're rotating their quarterbacks.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, the quarterback situation is still an issue. I mean, it's like you said, it really hasn't been nearly as much of an issue as you probably thought it might be, but you have to be feeling pretty good about the Dogs, man. Like the musical chairs analogy is apt, because I mean, not only do we still have really no idea who the other three teams in the playoff are going to be, but like, I still think Alabama sneaks in. This might be the weakest Alabama team that we've seen in, you know, quite some time. And in Ohio State, very much flawed relative to its normal, you know, two-way teams that they're rolling out. I mean, Oregon, we're talking about maybe not even surviving this. Oklahoma, even that offense doesn't look nearly as potent as it has the last few years. Like, for the major question mark that Georgia has at quarterback, you still got to be feeling really, really good, because normally there are two or three teams in that tier where you're like, you know, these teams are rolling. Like the Dogs are clearly the number one team in the country. I don't think that there has been this big of a gap between number one and whichever team ends up being number two in quite some time. And part of that is, you know, the dominance of Clemson, the dominance of Alabama, but good timing by the Dogs to have their best season under Kirby Smart at a time when seemingly every other program is at least semi down relative to what we've been used to.
That's right, man. I mean, we were talking about it coming into the year, and it was like the path is there for Georgia, just based on the fact that Trevor Lawrence is gone from Clemson. We don't know everything about DJU, and obviously that's proven out poorly. Bama, you know, that they're losing a lot in addition to just Mac Jones. I mean, the receivers and everything, that's a lot to restock and to just put on Bryce Young in his first year starting. So, yeah, this felt like the year to do it. And so far that George has absolutely put itself in that position right now. But big game this weekend.
Absolutely, man. All right, we'll break it down the week ahead later this week on Thursday. Looking forward to that, John. And enjoy these next few days.
All righty. You do the same, brother. Thank you.